End zone. Goddell again. His third of the night. This guy is a touchdown machine for the Houston Cougars.
Sasser again, just kind of taking over right now.
That's NBA stuff right there. He is a baller.
Stick it in your pipe and smoke it, baby.
Yes! Welcome to the Scott Holman Podcast. We are back tonight in our usual midweek spot, previewing the coming Cougar football game, talking a really strong week from the Cougar fall sports. On the whole, really great time of year. We're in September. We're in the season now. I've done this almost 400 times. I don't know if I've ever introduced myself. I'm Sam, one of the co-hosts of the show. Dustin, my friend, my co-host, how are you doing on this Wednesday evening, bud?
Hello, Sam. Nice to meet you. I'm doing well. It is after like the 3-day weekend, you know, I feel like I just barely got back to work, and all of a sudden you look up and it's like, oh no, I'm gonna be waking up in the morning. It's gonna be barely 48 hours until Cougar football is happening again. So excited to
don't hate it already
be here on Wednesday evening, and yeah, hurrying up and getting an episode out and talking about this Cougar football game that's happening against Texas Tech on Saturday, as well as a number of Cougar fall sports victories to talk about as well.
Got to mention at the top, our Big 12 friends, we are proud members of the 1012 Network. Check out the 1012 Pod wherever you get podcasts for your ears. Follow them on Twitter at TEN12 Network. Subscribe to the 1012 Podcast wherever you get podcasts. I said that already, and what I'm going to say again is something I've said a lot here on the show, is the greatness of Home Field Apparel, homefieldapparel.com, the good brand, our good sponsors, and just some darn good college shirts, hoodies, and just various apparels. I am currently, as I've exhausted my Cougar collection, is almost laundry day out here in the podcast Western headquarters. I am wearing currently the Evansville soccer shirt. He's wearing a top hat. He's playing soccer in some weird 70s gear. It is a very weird shirt, but very much my jam. If you are a little bit more conventional than yours truly, if you want a good Cougar collection, Homefield's got it. Homefield has a recently refreshed Cougar collection, multiple throwback Sailor Cougar designs, the best vintage premium apparel, comfortable tees, unique logos that you will find absolutely nowhere else. Homefield Apparel, homefieldapparel.com, promo code Holman12, HOLMAN12, saves you 15% off your first order. Don't even need to be a Cougar fan. You know, you could be kind of mixed on me and Dustin, but we're still going to give you that Holman12 to save 15%. Get some home field in your life. Be the talk of your tailgate or your section at TDECU with the home opener just over a week away. Dustin, what's a little bit less than a week away is the return of a team in the fall here, not Cougar football, but a Cougar fall sport that I think after a 3-0 weekend, we're very bullish on here at the Scott Holman Podcast. Houston Cougar volleyball coming off a 3-0 weekend at the Flo Hyman Collegiate Cup. You know, we talked to Dustin last time about this team that, you know, you don't want to put any pressure on any one contest too much, but we looked at this weekend slate, you know, it was past weekend slate, Bama, Oregon State, and Central Arkansas, and kind of said, yeah, any hypothetical loss here would be pretty bad for this team's resume. But thankfully, though, we're back here to talk about 3-0 weekend where the Cougars were really only seriously pushed in one of those three wins. You were at the Fertitta Center, Dustin, for the Alabama contest. I know it's skipping the Central Arkansas contest, which the Cougars won 3-0 thanks to a great team effort. But what did you think of this team now, having finally seen them in person?
Yeah, I was really impressed. And certainly I got one of their, I think, better matches of the year in a pretty dominant sweep over Alabama. But, you know, all in all, like I said, happy with the whole weekend. Like I said, it was a weekend where you probably really should have gone 3-0, and Houston did just that. You know, I did want to mention before we talk about the Alabama match, though, the Cougs beating Central Arkansas with a sweep on Friday. The Sugar Bears, who incidentally started Cougar grad transfer Kendall Haywood at middle blocker, surprisingly competitive in this one for about the first half of the match. They actually had set point 24-23 in the first set before the Cougs took it 27-25, and it was close for a while in the second set before the Cougs pulled away. And then the third set, not real close. And Abby Jackson, as usual, offensive centerpiece, 18 of Houston's 41 kills. But the real surprise in this match, though, was After a pretty sloppy first set from Houston, David Rare made a change at setter, replacing Annie Cook with Sam Houston grad transfer Morgan Janda, who held the job the rest of the weekend. And Cook was AAC Setter of the Year 2 years ago. She was second team all AAC last year. So definitely a surprise to see a change being made, Sam. But, you know, it seemed to pay immediate dividends with the Cougars, you know, taking control of that match and then sweeping the rest of the weekend. So I think it'd be very interesting to see how the setter position kind of plays out for the rest of the year.
Worth reiterating, though, Janda comes to the Cougars with a very interesting resume. She was a grad transfer, played the first several years of her collegiate career at Sam Houston, had a really interesting background in that she wasn't just a volleyball athlete at Sam Houston, also participated in track and field, actually won the women's high jump at the last, I believe it was Cougar Alumni Invitational in the outdoor track and field. So a really fantastic athlete. And you can't argue with the results that, you know, taking 6 of 8 sets against Alabama and Oregon State combined and looking pretty efficient offensively throughout. I thought it was really interesting kind of contrasting those two Friday wins. I mean, obviously, you know, Abby Jackson has, you know, a monster effort in the first one. I mean, 18 kills and 14 digs, regardless of the opponent, over 3 sets is just an unbelievable game performance, but incredible effort by Janda filling in for Cook against Bama. Had 29 assists and only 3 sets in that one. And I thought what was really impressive about Bama, though, and the Cougars' sweep win there was that Abby Jackson didn't play especially well there. She, I believe it was 7 kills and 5 attack errors for the sum total of that match, which is not an Abby Jackson-esque night, but instead you had Cortland Henderson, Isabel Toit, and Rachel Tullis combining between the three of them for 23 kills and 4 attack errors between them. That kind of performance is what makes this team so exciting. That, of course, you have a frontline attacking player like Abby Jackson, who's awesome, who's been, you know, one of the better attacking players out there over her Cougar career. But you also, in addition to Jackson, have a lot of veteran difference makers who can keep the offensive attack humming at a high level when, you know, like Friday night against Bama, Jackson has an off game.
Yeah, I was really excited to get the revenge win over Alabama, and a match that Houston really continually played better over the course of the match. You know, 25-20, kind of pulled away late in the first set, and then just, you know, really dominated sets 2 and 3, and just, you know, continued to hit better. Hit 258 as a team in the first set, 292 in the second, 357 in the third, which is, I think, is a huge compliment to setter Morgan Janda, that the Houston as a team, like you said, hitting really well, even with Abby Jackson having an off night. So very excited to get that win and another sweep. And then on Saturday, you know, it looked like the Cougars were going to sweep their way through the entire weekend, taking the first 2 sets pretty easily against Oregon State, 25-18, 25-19. But the Beavers, who had won their 2 other matches this weekend against Bama and Central Arkansas, were able to push the Cougs. They won a pair of extremely competitive sets, 28-26, 25-23. Fortunately, the Cougs jumped out to a 5-0 lead in the third set and were able to hold off the Beavers, taking that fifth set, 15-12. So, like I said, Cougs got the sweep, and with the sweep have now rattled off 5 straight wins after the season opening loss to Rice. So I think remains to be seen how helpful these wins will be at the end of the year on your resume. But like you said, this is 3 teams Houston needed to beat. 5-1 is 5-1. There's no bad losses on the resume, even if we're you know, not sure how many good wins there are yet.
And I was going to say, I'm glad they got pushed in one of these. I mean, I'm glad they got pushed in a winning effort, but it's helpful to, you know, fight your way through an opponent that's not going away. It's not, I almost would say it's not helpful to win every match 3-0 and then, you know, come up against a really good opponent and some adversity hits, and it's just not a familiar place to, you know, win those first 2 sets, win them fairly comfortably against the Beavs, and then have to battle back and ultimately need to win the fifth one to, you know, see off some pesky opponents. I think it's valuable. It's good for this veteran team to kind of deal with those situations. I mean, over the years, this team has been one to play a lot of 5-set matches, so no lack of late game experience, you know, clutch moment experience, you know, for a lot of these athletes that have been in the program for a few years. But, you know, good to get it here. I think it's a 3-0 weekend, and you got some character building, I think, on the third of those 3 wins.
So this coming week, Houston will play its third and final early season event, traveling to Starkville for the Maroon and White Invite. The Cougs will face South Alabama and host Mississippi State on Friday, and then Kennesaw State on Saturday morning. And that Friday evening tilt with Mississippi State, would really encourage you, listener, try to make it to ESPN Plus, 6 p.m. Central on Friday for that one. We've talked about how Houston doesn't have a lot of marquee matchups on the schedule for volleyball this year. This is one of them. The Bulldogs, a very strong team coming off a really strong season. They're 5-0 this year with wins over Oklahoma, Notre Dame. They're the second team out in the receiving votes in the current top 25, and it's a true road game. So big, big chance for David Rare and his team to pick up a resume-boosting win in Starkville this weekend, Sam.
Yeah, they were 16-2 in SEC play last year, obviously made the NCAA tournament, were 26 in the season in the RPI. And like you said, they are 5-0 with wins over Notre Dame and Oklahoma in the young season. Certainly not a must-win match, but man, that would be a jewel of a resume-building non-conference win if the Cougars can get it in a true road situation in Stark Vegas. Not nearly the level of an opponent, and I think maybe have gotten off to a bit slower start this year than they were last year, but worth noting, South Alabama was just a hair outside the national top 50 in the RPI last season, though they have losses already to Tulsa and Ball State, so maybe not the same level of program they were a year ago.
Yeah, and the Kennesaw State just outside the top 100 last year in the RPI, or just inside, I should say, the top 100 last year. 5-1 this year, not having really beaten anybody of note. So, like I said, with South Alabama looking pretty down this year, I would think, 2-1 this weekend is a push. 3-0 would be huge. 1-2 or worse would be disappointing for sure.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely your strongest weekend non-conference slate that you got to go against this year.
For sure. Moving along to Cougar soccer, the Cougs split a couple of home matches this past weekend. They had a home opener to forget, losing 3-0 to Baylor in front of a crowd of 1,006, the third largest in program history. The Cougs lost pretty badly, and kind of frustratingly so, because the numbers say Houston didn't play all that poorly. They had more shots on goal, more corner kicks, but Baylor had the finishing, and Houston did not. And, Sam, you never want to overreact to a single result, and Baylor looks like a pretty decent team this year, but not an amazing team. And this Cougar squad only gave up 3 goals in a game twice all last year. They've done it now twice in their first 4 games this season. So, I think a little concerning for a team with a lot of experience in, defense and midfield to be having a couple of, 3-goal games given up.
Yeah, the visiting Bears got on the board the first 10 minutes of this one. It was just basically all downhill from there. And you mentioned, if you want some small silver lining here, and with the obvious caveat that not all scoring chances or shots are equally valuable, the Cougars did get 15 shots total and 10 on goal, which you think would usually produce more than 0 goals. So at least the team was creating chances, though. You could also say that might be because the Cougars were down 2 goals for over 2/3 of this contest, and that Baylor probably sat back a bit more than normal with a multi-goal lead. Just frustrating. They got a good crowd out there. There's a Baylor team that, we came in playing a tough schedule, and it was a solid middle of the Big 12 team last year, but had a new head coach, had a very new roster still. And I think we were hoping at least it would be kind of a 1-0, 2-1 kind of loss if it was going to be a loss at all. Certainly a frustrating result to be multi-goals down pretty early in this one and not really be able to do much after that.
But the Cougars did bounce back in impressive form, beating Rice 3-1 for their second victory of the year. Houston played mostly on the back foot in the first half, with one incredible exception in CeCe Cross, stepping into one from well over 30 yards and hitting an absolute screamer of a goal. Play of the year candidate gives Houston a 1-0 lead that maybe they didn't entirely deserve in the 35th minute, and Rice did get an equalizer just before halftime on a penalty kick. But Houston looked like a different team after halftime. They were the aggressor over the final 45 minutes. Nadia Comasa, last year's leading goal scorer for the Cougs, got her first goal of the year off of an impressive piece of physicality in the 55th minute. And then defender Emma Clark put one in on a corner kick for the insurance goal. Rare accomplishment for her, Sam, just a second career goal for the fifth-year senior defender. But good to see the Cougars not only getting a much-needed win, but doing so while scoring 3 goals and kind of flexing a little bit of offensive muscle that they've, had trouble flexing at times this year so far.
Bit of a collector's item from Clark, eh?
There you go.
But I was going to say, that golazo from CeCe Cross to put the Cougs up 1-0 in the 35th minute. Even if you're not the biggest soccer fan generally, I'm practically begging all of you who are listening, if you have not seen it, go to the Houston Cougars soccer Twitter or Facebook page. You will find the highlight of this goal pretty quickly. I thought this was funny. I rewatched this. I watched this live, but rewatched the highlight because I thought I remembered it being kind of amusing. And it's Matt Peterson, the regular ESPN Plus play-by-play guy for Cougar Soccer. And he says, kind of half chuckling as Cross starts, Cross tries from distance. And as he's finishing the sentence, the goal goes in. And Peterson's absolutely losing his mind. It's really great. Obviously, a great goal and a great call by Matt to go along with it. I thought, as fun as that goal was, obviously, I think the more encouraging part was that final 45 minutes of soccer. Like you said, that this team dominated Rice in the final 45 minutes, that they won the second half 2-0 and very much deserved that. The second goal was just classic. Nadia Kamasa gets the ball in the box from Matty Dichiara, takes on and beats the Rice defender, slides it just past the goalie. Is the physicality that we saw from her last year that made her just such an intriguing redshirt freshman. And, you know, second straight win for the Cougars against the Owls on their home field, second in 3 tries overall in the series. Dustin, before these last 3 meetings that the Cougars have taken 2 of, we had only seen the Cougars win 1 of the last 12 contests between these programs. So really, no matter the specific state of Rice soccer in this current season, it's nice to enjoy some head-to-head success for the first time in a long time in this series. The last time the Cougars won back-to-back games in the series, Dustin, I believe the first 2 years of this series, or at least the first 2 years that UHCougars.com has, 2001 and 2002. We'd love to make that 2 in a row overall next year, but certainly enjoying Sunday night's win against the Owls.
Yeah, also just excited after dropping one to the Owls in volleyball to get the win so that football has a chance to be the rubber match in terms of fall sports against the Owls. Didn't want to go down 2-0 to them early on in the athletics department year, so good on Cougar soccer for getting the victory there. And the Cougs will be back on the road again this coming weekend. They're actually going to beat the football team to Lubbock by a couple of days. They'll be at Texas Tech on Thursday evening. The Red Raiders were top 100 but not NCAA tournament caliber team last year. This year, after beating Troy in the opener, they have 2 draws and 3 losses while scoring just 1 goal over their last 5 games. So even on the road, Sam, this one feels like it should be winnable for Houston.
I'm curious what's going to give in this match. And you mentioned you had the Red Raider attack that's only created 1 goal since August 18th, or a Cougar defense who was superb in 2021, a unit that I think we thought was going to be the strength of the team this year, but has struggled at times, hasn't kept a clean sheet so far in the young season. I would be thrilled to get the road win over a future conference foe, though I don't know if the Rice game has returned my confidence back to 100% yet, but I would say this is also not the Red Raider team that we probably expected when we kind of took a general look at the schedule before the season.
Yeah, and then a slightly shorter road trip than Lubbock. Houston will cross town to play Houston Baptist on Sunday evening. The Huskies were awful last year. They have no wins in 5 contests this year, including a loss to the Rice team that Houston just beat and a draw with the Sam Houston team that Houston beat earlier this year. So if you're getting the very subtle implication I'm making here, this is a game that Houston should definitely win, hopefully by a couple of goals.
I'm going to do my Tom Pender's voice here, Dustin. You don't walk into Sorrel's Field against the HBU Huskies and expect a win. You gotta earn that win, Dustin. You can't take any opponent for granted.
You know what?
Houston Baptist has looked very good recently.
I'll leave that to Coach Frias and the Cougs to not take HBU lightly, but I will go ahead and take HBU lightly. All right, we do want to talk about Cougar Cross Country. Kicked off their season this past weekend at the McNeese season opener. It was a 5-team event with Houston, obviously McNeese, and then SFA, Lamar, Northwestern State. The Cougs finished 2nd. Men took 3rd. A couple of seniors leading the way. Claire Meyer on the women's side finished 3rd on the individual leaderboard. Brandon Seagreaves on the men's side finished 2nd. So, against that level of competition, maybe, not 2nd and 3rd is not jumping off the page against those teams, but, Cougar cross country team that, I think is still trying to find its footing, compared to some past results and some events at McNeese. I think this is at least a decent result for the Cougs, Sam.
Context on the men's side too. One, I like that you had both a men's and women's runner in the individual top 3 on both sides there, Brandon Seagreaves in 2nd and Claire Meyer in 3rd, like you said. Also want to shout out brothers Branch Cox and Miles Cox. Miles Cox actually running his first collegiate meet. They were 8th and 9th in the top 10 on the men's side, and also Macy Ellis at 7th. On the women's side, I wanted to shout out also Claire Meyer earning her first ever AAC Athlete of the Week honors. Only the 3rd time ever a Cougar female cross-country athlete has earned that award since U of H joined the American. So shout out to Claire there, and the men's performance, doing it without Devin Vallejo Bannister, I think, like you said, it's a 5-team event here, 5-team against some, smaller regional colleges, but I think considering where the program has been recently, not a bad result.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of seniors leading the way, but the Cox brothers, a sophomore and a freshman, and then Houston's next three finishers after Meyer were three sophomores. So definitely some youth shining through there as well. So only four regular season cross country events on the Houston schedule. That was number one. Number two will be the Rice Invitational this coming Friday. Speaking of teams getting some seasons underway, men's golf actually starts their fall season this week. They'll be at the Jim Rivers Intercollegiate, hosted by Louisiana Tech, in a city whose name I'm not going to pronounce because I would certainly mispronounce it if I tried. This is one of just three fall tournaments for the Cougar men's golf program before the season begins in earnest in February. So we'll have a little bit more by way of season preview at that time, but definitely excited to see the Cougs, get at least a couple of fall tournaments under their belt. Sam,
quick aside, for a split second I thought you were like refusing to say Ruston. I'm like, wait a minute, like, it's not in Ruston? It's not in is Dustin just refusing to say Ruston because of the hotel kerfuffle from our 2011 road trip there? Hey, we'll get distracted. Obviously I'm excited to see what Cougar men's golf looks like, see what the tournament five that Coach Dismuke rolls out there looks like, because yeah, a couple key slots to fill, but I thought some really interesting guys that came in the offseason. I think Dismuke's done a pretty good job with transfers and bringing transfers in here, or instant impact guys. So interested to see who stands out here and kind of gauge our expectations for the spring season based on that.
Yeah, no, I have no, it's nights in that I have beef with. I have no beef with Ruston, Louisiana, the city.
I don't know if Ruston was catching like some strays there. I was curious, I don't remember Dustin having any specific beef with Ruston. Can you vamp for like 5 seconds? I want to see if I can pronounce, because I made a note of the event. I did not make a note of the Chougeron. I'm gonna go with that. Chougeron.
I was gonna go with like Chowdhury, so I'm probably, you're probably closer with throwing the accent on there.
I have no smooth segue from the Chougeron, the city where Cougar men's golf is gonna be playing in their upcoming fall event, to our next topic, but it's a topic that's easy to segue to. It's an exciting second year in a row, a matchup that's gonna about to become an annual one, but has been nice over the years to see this program, even if the results haven't been nice. I think we like to reiterate this a lot to us, and I think both appreciate that this school, Texas Tech, has made an effort to at least occasionally get the Cougars on the schedule, and, in the interim between the Southwest Conference collapsing and where we are now. And to learn a bit about the Red Raiders, we're going to talk to a guy we've had on at a number of different places over the years, someone we very much like, and get the skinny on the Red Raiders and what Cougar fans could expect to see on Saturday.
All right, we're very excited to be joined for the second consecutive year on the Scott Holman podcast by Albie from the Tortillas and Takes podcast. Of course, one of our sister podcasts within the 1012 network. So very excited to be having you on tonight to discuss some Texas Tech and U of H football. Sam, not able to make it, so it's just going to be one-on-one. But Albie, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk some football to this evening.
Thanks for having me. I love being on the Scott Holman podcast. Y'all are fantastic. Well, it's already one of my favorite non-tech pods before you joined the 1012 network. Now it's just even better that you're on the 1012 network. And so it's just all fantastic. Like, I'm a big fan. Love it. Thanks for having me.
For sure. Well, I want to go ahead and start with just like kind of a big picture program question. Since Texas Tech announced Joey McGuire as the new head coach, last season, it's been a hire that's, I think, been really intriguing. And if you're a program that's outside the top, 15 or 20 most resource in the country, like both of our respective programs are, you're looking for some kind of market inefficiency. And over the years at U of H, and at Tech, that's been, getting unique offenses, more recently for Houston, that's been getting area recruits back home via the transfer portal. So what is Texas Tech's kind of long-term plan for how McGuire is going to elevate the program above its recent level of kind of being a, 6-7 wins, lower middle part of the Big 12?
Yeah, so it's Tech's new strategy is very interesting. So I think Tech is one of the schools that when Texas and Oklahoma decided they're going to leave the Big 12 is going to be new. Tech said, okay, we're going to have to figure out a way in the new Big 12 landscape to have our niche and really compete, right? Like, we haven't competed for the last decade. How are we going to be able to compete in the new Big 12? And they said, oh, I know how. Money. Money. Yeah, money will do it. So, like, started off a huge investment to the football program as far as they're going to be renovating that south end zone, renovating all. They're going to renovate the indoor practice facility. They're going to have a whole new thing like that. All is also there. I'm sure you've heard about it, Dustin, but $25,000 to every football player that comes to the program, right? And so they're really just throwing money at the problem. Which, let me tell you something, I'm a fan of, right? Like, When I watched the Pony Express documentary, that 30 for 30 on it, I wasn't mad at SMU doing what they were doing. I was mad Tech wasn't doing it better. Right? Like, this, I have no problem with it, right? So, like, that's one thing you're doing. And also with Joey McGuire, so you kind of talked about U of H recruiting. Joey McGuire has realized something in that, like, recently, I think the last few coaches that have come to Tech have had this mind state of Tech is out in Lubbock, players don't want to come to Tech, so therefore, we have to find a way to win despite having lesser than talent. I think Joey McGuire has looked at it and said, I can get players to Tech. And so far, he's done it. I mean, in the short amount of time, at one point, which is wild, Texas Tech got the number one recruiting class for 2023 in the country. Now, obviously, the market is reset, and we're not number one anymore. But we most likely will be top 25, which we're usually not top 25 recruiting class in the country. Actually, the only coach that consistently had us in the top 25 was Tommy Tuberville. As much as Tech fans hate Tommy Tuberville, he was a good recruiter. And so Joey McGuire is doing – Joey McGuire right now is set to have what is currently the greatest recruiting class in Texas Tech history in his first full recruiting cycle. So that's pretty amazing. So so money and just getting kids in Texas, using his connection, being a Texas high school football coach, is doing – and then also his energy, man. It is hard not to love Joey McGuire. Like, it is really tough to not love Joey McGuire. The fact that I keep him at arm's length because I've been hurt too many times, it makes me more less of – like, that makes me on the far end of everybody that's just dove in to the Joey McGuire experience, right? From the very beginning, he's been very well received by the fan base and well-loved after his first let's go. Like, it's been – everything's been groovy.
I mean, I love it. I've been intrigued by that hire because, you know, not a lot of college experience as becoming the high school legend and then, you know, the position coach at Baylor, but he does seem like he's got everyone in or around Lubbock on his side and pulling for him. So I'm really intrigued to see how that goes. Speaking of intriguing hires, his offensive coordinator hire, Zach Kittley, arrives in Lubbock this year as Tech's offensive coordinator from Western Kentucky. Really interesting hire, the last coaching carousel, someone who saw a really prolific passing attack at Western Kentucky and HBU before that. Not to mention his, you know, ties as a grad assistant at Tech in the past, but you know, he's also someone who was a grad assistant as recently as 2017. Saturday will be only the second game of his, you know, OC tenure and only his second year as an FBS coordinator. So I'm curious how close you think the offense we'll see on Saturday is going to be to a fully realized air raid passing attack, and what's the kind of temperature on Kittley without his Bailey Zapp who he had at Western Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, the air raid's back. Like, the first game, and that was a big question of how much the air raid will be back. It's back, right? But the air raid is become so nuanced. There's different types of versions of the air raid, right? Like, the Mike Leach air raid and the Cliff Kingsbury air raid are two very different air raids. But I think what we've seen from Kittley, at least in game one against Murray State, is his air raid, now that he has running backs, is a lot more similar to Kingsbury, where it's spread out. Get the ball out to your best players, whether that is a running back or a receiver, but also go north-south. One thing we noticed with Leach was go north-south, but we ain't worried about the running backs. How Mum didn't care about the running backs, right? Kittley, when he was at Western Kentucky and HBU, didn't really use running backs that much, but at the same time, he didn't have running backs to use, right? Tech's running backs are actually pretty good. Like, it's Taj Brooks and Siraji Thompson are good running backs. And that was a big question I had was that, like, this ain't Western Kentucky anymore, buddy boy. You got to use the running backs that we have at our disposal because, like, you're not used to having running backs as good. What'll happen? And what happened is we had four rushing touchdowns against Murray State, three by Taj Brooks, one by Siraji Thompson. It was great. They played stupendously. But flip side of that is the Cliff Kingsbury. It is still an air raid, so we pass the ball a lot. Right. So it's but I think we are going to see that north south more fun being done, ball out to your star players a lot. But the air raid is back. The stuff we saw in the last 3 years with David Yost and Sonny Cumbie, that was a little bit more east west. Scrap all that. We're trying to score points.
All right. And, the guy running the passing attack start the year, kind of an interesting choice in that it was Tyler Shuck, and who obviously got hurt against Murray State on Saturday, leading to the guy who started the end of last season, Donovan Smith, being named a starter against U of H. And I did see where McGuire said that Baron Morton was going to see some time as well. So, you know, what do you think Smith does well enough to stress that Cougar defense, and in what areas of his young game, you know, still need work? And what, if anything, do you know about Morton?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I am one of the few people that I was, when Shuck was named, I assumed Shuck would be the starter all offseason. So when he was announced to start, it didn't surprise me. I know a lot of Tech fans wanted Donovan Smith because Donovan Smith impressed at the end of last year, right? He got that Iowa State upset, almost upset Baylor. Had a really bad game against Oklahoma State, but so did everybody that played Oklahoma State last year. So a lot of people like Donovan Smith and wanted to see him really grow. Also, he beat Mississippi State in the bowl game, so really wanted to see him grow. But I've been of the opinion that Tyler Shuck has the best arm talent on the roster. And that opinion, I still believe in that. However, Tyler Shuck now has played only three full games in his Texas Tech career, and the other two games he'd been hurt within the first half. At this point, this is Donovan Smith's team. And I know that reports now is that Shuck will be out for 3 to 6 weeks. If Smith continues what he did at the end of last season, sorry, Shuck, we may never see him in a Texas Tech uniform again type of thing, right? This is Smith's team as far as I'm concerned. Now, when it comes to Smith, though I think Shuck has better arm talent, Smith's, like, he still can pass that thing. He can still tote it. He scored four touchdowns himself through the air against Murray State last Saturday. So he's a really good passer. And one thing that's been good is he's become a really good decision maker. I think every game he plays, he builds confidence. And when Donovan Smith is confident, he's a very good quarterback. One thing we saw against Oklahoma State, a little bit against Baylor too, is that he lost some of that confidence because he got beat up. Those are two really great, tremendous defenses. So he got beat up. But when Donovan Smith is confident, he's a very dangerous quarterback because of his arm. And then also he's a wildly powerful runner. The guy is huge for a quarterback. 6'5", 230 or whatever. He is huge for a quarterback. He's athletic. He's quick. But he's also, like, he's big. He can bowl you over too. But he makes smart decisions. So I think that's one thing is that you got to watch out for his legs because he can run at any moment. It's not going to be easy to tackle, not going to be easy to take down. And so that's one of the things where he's a little bit different than Shuck and Morton. Morton, however, don't be fooled by the little white guy that's the third-string quarterback. He actually – we were arguing about this on our channel, whether he's faster than Smith, right? So it's kind of funny that you bring in the backup white guy quarterback as the wildcat to the black quarterback that just started. But Morton might be – he was a dual-threat quarterback in high school, ran all the time, very quick, very shifty. He just – I think he has a lot of room to grow as a quarterback, right? But he's a baller. Like, he's just a gamer. He's a guy who's going to go out there. He's going to give it all. He's going to game the situation. But for him, I think this is really a situation where they put him in packages and let him feel what it is like to play big boy football because that's what he's lacking more than anything.
A quarterback duo that challenges expectations. I love it. Looking at the other side of the ball, Texas Tech loses linebackers Colin Schooler, Rico Jeffers. I'd say the only probably consistent pass rushing threat last year was Tyree Wilson. So what's your overall confidence level with the defensive front, and who besides Wilson should the Cougars be worried about on Saturday?
Yeah, so we didn't get any pressure on the quarterback last year, but it wasn't because of talent. It was because of defensive scheme, and it bothered me. Like, it pissed me off for 3 years. I did not understand. We would rush three down linemen, and with no blitz. I've never seen a defense that rushed three down linemen consistently and never blitzed. Yet, last 3 years, that's what we did, right? And so a lot of those, the lack of sacks, lack of tackles for loss, you look at that and you say, okay, well, Tech's defense is always, Tech defense is bad. But we have talent on the line. So what happened is Tyree Wilson, of course, is there. He's a future first-round pick. ESPN even had an article about him being a dark horse with the number one pick overall. I think that's a little wild. But he a good chance he's picking the first round because he's just an athletic beast. And he's somebody he's going to watch out for. Got sacked in the last game. Philip Bleedy played great at the weak side, at the opposite end, defensive end last week. He's kind of been the biggest question mark on the D-line. But we all a couple of guys I like to call the law firm of Hutchins and Bradford, are two DTs. Last few years, because we had three down linemen, they were going on and off, right? Only one was playing at a time. This year, with more four D lineman sets, both of them are playing, and both of them caused absolute havoc on the Murray State O line last week. I expect them to cause havoc all year long, to be honest. I think they're both very good DTs. There's a good chance both of them might be playing on Sundays. I think they're that good. So the D line is very good. Linebackers were the biggest question mark coming in because we lost so much. I mean, you mentioned Jeffers and Schooler, but like we also lost Brandon Boyer Randall, Jacob Morgenstern. Like, there were so many. Our linebacker was the strength of the entire team last year, and almost everybody besides Krishan Merriweather is gone. So that was the biggest question mark coming in. They played a really good game against Murray State, but I still have more questions. We have a former backup, or we have a former quarterback playing backup linebacker right now. Jacob Rodriguez, who played quarterback in Virginia, he did play linebacker before. He is a linebacker by trade, but he went and said, I want to play quarterback for a couple of years and see if I can do it. He can't. So he's now back to playing his linebacker position. But he apparently he wowed during training camp, but it's still, when you have a quarterback now playing linebacker, it's a little to be desired. Krishan Merriweather is a beast, is a man among boys. He's fantastic, but he can't do everything by himself. So that's that linebacker spot I still have a lot of questions about. And then the secondary. So if you know anything about Texas Tech, you know we have a history dating back to the 90s of not great secondary play. We always have, and it seems like we always will, because coming into the season, the secondary, if you look at the two deep, of the 12 guys in the two deep, 11 of them are seniors. This is, if any of there was a year to be have a good secondary, this was the year. This, everybody came back from last year. Like, it was great. Muddy Waters, a transfer that we had last year, got hurt. He's back playing that new star position that made for all the Texans fans, Jalen Petre, made Jalen Petre famous at Baylor. Yeah, that is what Muddy Waters is playing, right? He's probably one of our better players in the secondary. Taylor Demerson, the Rabbit, he had a great season last year. He's coming back. Rashad Williams is somebody that everybody was raving about. I was so excited for the secondary, and they kind of got exposed against Murray State, right? So an FCS team, an FCS quarterback, had a couple big shots down the field against them. They had a 54-yard bomb in the second quarter that scored the only touchdown of the game for Murray State, right? They had a couple other big passes down the field, and so – you know, for the secondary, I'm thinking this is finally the year that we'll have a secondary that we won't be ashamed of. And yet, game one, still a little shame. Still feel some shame. So that's, you know.
So that's funny. That kind of gets me to my next question. So you can just see, you already kind of talked about the secondary, so you can just answer this one rapid fire, I guess. If last year's a fun statistical quirk, Texas Tech picked Clayton Tune off four times in last year's game. Texas Tech only intercepts six passes the rest of the year. Clayton Tune only throws six interceptions the rest of the year. So if I could offer you one Clayton Tune interception on Saturday, you taking that, or you hoping out, you let roll the dice and hope for maybe.
I need more. So the whole thing this offseason has been take three turnovers for Tech. Against Murray State, we had zero. Not a good when your whole thing is about take three. Now, the defense did play well overall. I mean, you hold any team. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's Our Lady of the Lake. You hold them to 10 points. That's a good day. But no turnovers. So that's I guarantee you that is something that McGuire and Tim DeRuiter, the defensive coordinator, has stressed all week is, hey, remember last year, Clayton Tune turned the ball over. Sure, he took care of the ball throughout the rest of the season, but y'all know y'all can get after him. And so I know they're stressing that this week. And I need at least two. Two picks? I want two. I want two against Clayton Tune. I personally still not – I still got questions about the guy. I still got questions about the guy. I still think we can get if I want to see a Texas Tech victory, I think two interceptions will be something that we can definitely rock with.
All right. Sounds fun. And then you said kind of some things about this already, but – you know, appreciating that you should probably take every game against an FCS team with several grains of salt. You know, what, if anything, do you feel like you learned from this team in week one against Murray State?
Yeah, so of course it is an FCS team, right? Like you said, it's not even like – it's not North Dakota State or South Dakota. Like, this is a mid-level FCS team. They went 6-5 last year. They're not a good FCS team, right? However, last year we played Stephen F. Austin, and we beat Stephen F. Austin 28-22. In a game where I was sure in the fourth quarter we were going to lose, right? The year before, we played Houston Baptist, a low-level FCS team, not even a mid-level. They're a low-level FCS team, and beat them 38-35 in a game where I was pretty sure in the fourth quarter we were going to lose. So the fact that I could go up against an FCS team this year and kick my feet up by the second quarter and be like, okay, we're going to win this game, that's fantastic, I don't have to sweat about it, made me feel a little bit better. A lot of questions, I already kind of talked about Kittley, a lot of questions as far as what type of offense we were going to run. Kittley's trying to score points, and I appreciate it. Like, he didn't leave anything on the – he didn't do that thing that you see some coaches do in week one of like, oh, well – we saw Texas do it against Louisiana Monroe. Or like, we got Alabama next week, so I don't want to show all my playbook. Kittley's like, nah, bro, I don't care if they see my playbook. I'm trying to score points. And for Donovan Smith and Tyler Shuck, every single drive they were out there, they scored a touchdown. Every single one. They went, what was it, like eight drives in a row, touchdown. It wasn't until we got to the third-string quarterback, Baron Morton, that we saw a punt, right? There was actually even a skit they did that came out. We're recording this on Wednesday, a skit that dropped today, where Kittley talked to Austin McNamara. Austin McNamara is a preseason All-American, arguably the best punter in the country. And Kittley went to him and said, hey, man, great job punting on Saturday, but just so you know, the only people that root for you, want to see you is your mom and the opposing team. Because that's how Kittley feels. He doesn't want to punt. He tries to score at all times. And I appreciate it. It reminds me of when we had Kingsbury. The difference with Kingsbury is we'd score and then let the other team score. And then we would score and then we'd let the other team score. So I'm hoping that, you know, DeRuiter, at the very least on the defensive side, can stop the other team after we score.
All right. And then what position group on the team would you say that you are most confident in, and what position group are you least confident in at this point in time?
Yeah, so most confident? You know what? The D-line, which is – I wouldn't have said that a week ago. I would not have said that a week ago. But they really impressed me against Murray State. Like I said, they have a lot of talent. The only question mark I have is Philip Bleedy, and those questions are erased. I think he'll be good. That D-line I think is really good. Tyree Wilson – Tony Bradford, Jalen Hutchins, like that is, those are talented guys. I think all three of them, Tyree Wilson, we will see on Sundays, and Hutchins and Bradford, I think we can see them on Sundays too. So, you know, I think the D-line is something I'm actually pretty confident in. As far as least confident, man, it's, again, I wouldn't have said this a week ago, but it's probably secondary, right? Like the secondaries, they did not play well against Murray State, and they've kind of been a thorn, not to mention that Adrian Fry did get hurt. He's our start. He's our number two corner right now. He's been playing for 4 years, but he did get hurt in game one. He is supposed to play against Houston, but he's a little bit questionable because he is a little dinged up. And so we'll see what happens there. Another questionable piece, I would say, I'm going to give you a twofer here. They played really well against Murray State, but I still have questions about the O-line. So the O-line last year was one of our most veteran pieces we had on the team, and they still suck. So that's not great, right? So we've replaced a lot of the O-linemen this year. They played very well against Murray State, but again, grains of salt, it is Murray State. We don't know how well they play, and it doesn't help that Cole Spencer, one of the key cogs we had, a Western Kentucky transfer, is out for the year. He's not going to be playing in this game. And we're already thin. We already don't have a lot of depth on this O-line. So, like, the O-line is another big question mark, especially, I mean, Houston, y'all got some big boys up front, too. So how it happens when you're no longer going up against an undersized D-line, you're going up against a D-line that just as big as you are, you know, can they handle it with one of the better guys out? So that's another question mark that I have. And those are two bad question marks to have, I will say. O-line and secondary, those really aren't ones you want to have question marks on. But I want to see how they do.
All right, and then one last question to leave you with here. So who's a player I probably wouldn't think to ask a question about, didn't think to ask a question about, maybe hasn't gotten enough shine that – maybe someone a little under the radar who you think is going to have a big game on Saturday?
I mentioned him once, but Taj Brooks, man, like that, like he is such a good running back. Like he's such a good running back. And so Roger Thompson has been the quote unquote starter for the last like 3, maybe even 4 years. Like he is consistent. Sirajic is very good, consistent, going to get the ball. And it's one of those things, but Taj is so wildly talented. I think our running attack is very, like, I think our running attack is, I think, the most underrated running attack in the entire conference. Like, everybody knows about Deuce Vaughn out in K-State and Bijan Robinson in Texas. And, like, everybody knows about the guys that are supposed to be good. We know about them. But people don't realize just how good Taj Brooks and Roger Thompson at Tech are. And I don't think this offense is really going to show and really showcase their talents. But I'm hoping that at the very least we're going to see them really. I mean, I think Kittley and McGuire has said, I mean, he's going to play the hot hand. He's going to play whoever is performing well. And Brooks, I'm yet to see Brooks have a bad game. He's that good. And Thompson, again, is very consistent. So that running game in general, but definitely Taj Brooks. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about Taj Brooks and how good he is. And I've gone this whole podcast without even mentioning the receivers. But, I mean, Texas Tech, you know our receivers are good. I ain't got to mention.
All right, well, Alvy, appreciate you again. Cougs, make sure to give them a follow, the Tortillas and Takes podcast on Twitter, @Tortillas_RRS. Thanks again, Alvy, for coming on. And if you got it, let the folks know where else to follow you and get their Texas Tech takes. You're a school we played last year. You're playing you this year. We're going to play you probably every year going forward. So that's, you got to give these guys a follow. Let them know where to find you, Alvy.
That's right. I mean, there's a little bit of a weird rivalry brewing with Tech and U of H. I personally don't get it. Maybe it's because I went to grad school at UH. So for those that don't know, I am a Houstonian, right? Did go to grad school at UH. Dustin's seen all the Houston sports things on my wall right now. So I don't really get it. But like, I noticed a lot of U of H fans don't like Tech, and a lot of Tech fans don't like U of H. I don't get it. Whatever. So there may be a nice little rivalry brewing. In the in the future now as Houston joins the Big 12. But for all of you that do hate Texas Tech, make sure to hate listen us at Tortillas and Takes podcast. Anywhere you get podcasts, we're all there. Like Dustin said, follow us at Tortillas_RRS. We are the official podcast of Red Raider Sports. And you can follow me at Mr_IllBeSure. We do all sports, not just football. We'll do it all. My co-host Jeremy and Kenzie, they do volleyball and softball, and you know, football, basketball. Right? UH Tech, that's going to be a great basketball rivalry coming up when UH goes to Big 12, and so that'll be a lot of fun. So thanks for having me on, Dustin.
Yeah, I got to say, I don't know if I understand. I mean, I kind of feel about Texas. It's kind of like the, you know, it's Texas school, you know, so, and it's the kind of the Texas school that, you know, the UT and A&M look down at. We're in the kind of the everybody else, right, like tier of yeah. Texas in terms of money and everything like that historically. So I see it as more like a sibling rivalry where, you know, I'd like to see Tech do well, but also, you know, I definitely want to see us beat y'all on Saturday and whenever we meet, of course, but.
Yeah. I mean, I think the game will be very interesting only because, so I'll be pretty upfront. I'm very curious. So after U of H lost to Tech, I'm sorry to extend your pod a little bit here, but after U of H lost to Tech last year, UH went on a run, right, and is beating everybody. But the American Athletic was also very down last year. Like, everybody sucked. And so to me, it's a big question. Now, you did beat Auburn in the bowl game, but you also lost Cincinnati. Like, it's a big question of, like, was U of H – did they improve as the year went on? Like, did U of H really get that much better? Did Tune get that much better? Or was it that the American Athletic was that bad last year? And I think this year will really prove what's right, right? Like Tech has a new coach, new quarterback, new OC, all that other stuff. But it is in Lubbock. And also, American Athletic is a lot better this year, right? Tulsa's better. UCF is back to being UCF. Cincinnati's still Cincinnati. So this year I think will really tell, is UH for real? Are they ready to make the jump next year to the Big 12, or was last year a fluke? And we'll see. And I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question. And we'll start to see this weekend.
So I certainly feel more knowledgeable now, having listened to you and Albie talk about this, than I would have, you know, prior to that. But I think what's been interesting to me, Dustin, about this Texas Tech team, even though it's a team that we just saw over 12 months ago, is that, you know, with the only data point for them under Joey McGuire being this past Saturday's win over Murray State, they're kind of an unknown. Like, this isn't me saying, oh, well, you know, they're a fraud. They just beat a, you know, middling FCS team by 53. I'm not saying that, but there's still a lot we don't know. It's kind of like, I was kind of looking at the offense and be like, oh, this is what, you know, their Zach Kittley, their OC's offense is going to look like. Well, we don't exactly know. And here's what Tim DeReuter defense looks like. Well, we don't exactly know. And there's like a lot of familiar names, but, you know, are all those familiar names going to have the exact same role under this staff, almost entirely new staff than they did previously? We don't know. And I think it's kind of a mystery that cuts both ways. I think that's why you've seen the Vegas line in this game kind of wildly swing. You know, it started out with the Cougs, I think, a slight favorite, to a pick'em, to Tech being a 3 to 4 point favorite, to back a little bit closer to a pick'em, but I think still Tech a favorite most places you look, at least as of Wednesday night. So they're kind of a mystery, Dustin, and that's weird to say about a team that, again, we saw just over 365 days ago at NRG Stadium.
It's kind of strange in that it feels like a second shot, like a shot at redemption for that game a year ago, but also kind of it feels like its own thing because, like I said, a different coach for Texas Tech. You know, Tyler Shuck being out means that, you know, different quarterback than we saw a year ago. You know, Noah Azuqama in the passing game, you just a lot of new faces. So, you know, it kind of does and doesn't feel like a chance at redemption for last year's game. I'm sure Coach Holgorsen is going to remind all the players that were here last year what happened and, you know, give them a chance to redeem themselves. But, you know, I think a lot of interesting aspects of this matchup, especially after talking to Albie. You know, you heard some of his concerns about the Texas Tech O-line and the secondary. Definitely hoping to see Houston exploit those two aspects with, you know, Sac Avenue and hopefully Clayton Tune, you know, getting a little bit more vertical with the passing attack than we saw a week ago. Look, you know, trying to have some of the similar success that, you know, that you heard, that, you know, I'll be saying even that Murray State was having some success taking some shots downfield. So definitely gives Dana Holgorsen, Shannon Dawson, the Cougar offense, some things to think about. And then in terms of things that make you a little more nervous, maybe, you know, you heard Albie talk about Donovan Smith being a big, hard-to-bring-down runner. You know, the Cougars piled up a ton of hurries against UTSA, but they had a hard time bringing Frank Harris down, actually. And I'm kind of curious to see if Donovan Smith is going to give them a similar type of trouble.
Donovan Smith, he's a big dude. I mean, I didn't need Albie to tell me that to confirm that I watched a decent amount of their Liberty Bowl win over Mississippi State, which Smith started at the end of last year. He started Tech's last four games. And I know Albie said specifically that, you know, Shucks has the best arm talent. I was shocked before week one when McGuire said that Shuck was their starter. I really thought Smith showed you everything he needed to show you, was more dynamic, even as a really first-time Division I quarterback, not even just a first-time Division I starter. He was getting really his first live reps last year and just looked significantly more dynamic than Tyler Shuck did at any point. I mean, I didn't remember this, Dustin. Threw for 262 yards, two touchdowns, and no picks on over 10 yards of pass attempt in an extremely close loss to the eventual Big 12 champions Baylor, who had one of the better defenses out there last year, a defense that carried them to that Big 12 title and upset of Iowa State, not trying to rub that one in, but to get bowl eligible that Smith was also the starter of. I do feel like he's a different kind of runner than Frank Harris. I don't know if Tech's going to call as much designed run also for Smith as UTSA did for Frank Harris. I feel like Frank Harris is a bit slippier, more slippery. Slippier is not a word. But he's a guy who absolutely can make stuff happen with his feet if the play breaks down. And I have no doubt there's going to be at least one or two occasions where Smith is able to get to the first down and just the Cougars either, you know, got too aggressive or didn't really spy him and he's able to get the yards with his feet. Well, I do feel like even though, you know, he doesn't have nearly the just level Division I reps experience, I do feel like he has a good amount more arm talent than the guy we just saw in San Antonio, which is a, you know, scary thought because this Cougars secondary, you know, I think they did some things against UTSA. I think the box score makes it look worse than it was. I thought they did make a positive difference at times, but it's the second week in a row you're going against a talented quarterback in an offense that is not going to hesitate to throw the ball a fair amount against you. And it's another kind of stress test situation. I'm very interested what that offense is going to look like. You know, I realize Smith went 14 of 16 against Murray State at well over 10 yards an attempt, but I don't really put that much stock in stats against Murray State. And I mentioned him, I think, at the top, their OC, Zach Kittley. Really interesting hire, a guy who checks a lot of the boxes, is a Tech alumnus. I believe his dad is still their director of track and field. Last season was the OC of the nation's top passing attack at Western Kentucky. His quarterback there, Bailey Zappe, broke the FBS single-season passing yards record, not surprisingly held previously by Texas Tech quarterback. Not to get too sidetracked, but I thought it was really interesting that offense last year at Western Kentucky, Dustin, they imported it from Houston Baptist, like Zappe and I believe his top three receivers from HBU, who had had a really good passing attack on some not-so-great FCS teams. But he doesn't arrive this time with the core of his offense from his previous stop, and he has some good pieces to work with, but yeah, I'm curious whether the personnel that the Matt Wells staff left over and what Joey McGuire and the new staff could scrape together in the offseason really exactly matches what he wants to do. And I think the biggest thing that's going to prevent them maybe from becoming that fully realized Zach Kittley air raid offense is something you mentioned, the weakness. I would say the biggest weakness of this team, their offensive line, who only returns two every game starters from a year ago and had a couple guys start against Murray State who were seeing their first extended Division I action. So, you know, obviously that Tech passing attack against the Cougars secondary is a matchup that probably gives both Dustin and I a little bit of angst, a little bit of heartburn, but I would feel very strongly that Tech should be concerned about this experience, very tough, this Cougar defensive front that even at times not playing their best against UTSA had an absurd amount of pressures on Frank Harris, still had three sacks. That, you know, sack avenue against Texas Tech's offensive line is as bad of a mismatch. It's not the only mismatch in this game, and some of those go against the Cougars, but it is not a good matchup for the Red Raiders, and I think the Cougars' best hope of winning this game is really controlling that line of scrimmage, not letting Taj Brooks have the kind of game he had a year ago against this team in NRG, and, you know, to make Tech one-dimensional and really allow guys like Derek Parrish, DeAnthony Jones, and Nelson Caesar to pin their ears back and go after Donovan Smith.
Yeah, you mentioned the Kittley hire, and I'm kind of really intrigued to see how that one plays out, because obviously had a big year last year leading that Western Kentucky offense, but that was literally his only, you know, only year of being an FBS coordinator. Previously had been a Tech grad assistant and then had been at the FCS level until just last year. So really just his second year as an FBS actual honest-to-goodness coach. And, you know, had a, like you mentioned, incredibly veteran team that he, you know, imported with him from HBU. So kind of starting over, you know, at Texas Tech, playing at a much higher level and without, you know, kind of that, you know, level of familiarity, you know, veteran squad that you kind of know already. So curious to see how he does, you know, against actual high level competition. And to be clear, you know, if Dana Holgorsen had brought in Zach Kittley as his offensive coordinator, this, I've been thrilled like that. You know, I think it's a really interesting, intriguing hire, but definitely someone still with plenty to prove. And, you know, in terms of a couple of, you know, Cougar position groups that I thought, you know, were a little up and down in the UTSA game, and but, you know, I thought kind of came on down the stretch. I think they're both going to get really tested in this one. That's the Cougar secondary and the Cougar offensive line. You saw the Cougar secondary struggle at times, but like I said, thought played better down the stretch. But, you know, you heard Albie talk about this is going to be a straight up air raid offense. It's going to throw the ball a lot of times. So, big, big test for them. And then, you know, you heard Albie. I was a little honestly surprised how high Albie was on Texas Tech's defensive line. We saw the Cougars not really block that well until late in the game against UTSA. They definitely, Sam, I think, can't afford to take that long to get in the game again in Lubbock.
Yeah, I kind of see eye to eye with Albie on that one. That's probably the matchup on the Cougar side of things that scares me the most. We saw, you know, an offensive line who really didn't look like they had everything together in the opening week against UTSA. When these teams met last year, the Cougar line didn't have the best of times protecting Clayton Toon, really allowing the Cougar offense to establish any kind of run game in that one. And all of those stars from last year's Tech defensive line are back. I realize there's a lot of unrealized potential, starting with Tyree Wilson, but he's a freak, man. 6'6", 270. And I don't blame anyone who wasn't filled with confidence by how the U of H O-line did in week one. And having that guy be your assignment this week, along with a couple of returning stars and Jalen Hutchings and Tony Bradford Jr. And, you know, maybe it's good the Cougars had that kind of, you know, pride testing week one, and probably, you know, had a week, you know, in terms of being, you know, the offensive lineman, where you had your performance probably pretty critically reviewed in the Sunday film session and, you know, in subsequent practice since then. So certainly not going into this game with a big head, overconfident, and, you know, maybe Tech will get the full focus in a way that UTSA maybe didn't in week one. I will say, other than maybe Wilson at times, none of these three defensive linemen are really pass rushing types, but they're big veteran space eaters, the kind of guys who can totally neutralize any effort to establish a run game. And I just mentioned, you know, if Tech's not able to at least occasionally run the ball, it's probably not going to be great for their offense. I think that cuts both ways. If you see the Cougars really be unable to get anything going in the run game, it's going to be bad. I've obviously have my opinions about what I think is the most effective way to run this Cougar offense, but you're going to need to at least be able to, you know, more than occasionally run the ball. And Dana Holgorsen's not going to do anything less than more than occasionally run the ball. It's the unit matchup that concerns me the most. Just how does this Cougar line bounce back from performance that was below standard for those first three quarters against UTSA? And they have an experienced linebacker group too. They bring back Krishan Merriweather, a COVID year super senior, one of Tech's top tackle guys per year and a multi-year starter. We'll also see a fair amount, I think, of Josiah Pierre at linebacker, a guy who played a decent amount, was a part-time starter in 2021, and Cozy Eldridge, who's listed as a linebacker, defensive back, probably going to play a hybrid position. And just, I know our guest wasn't filled with confidence about their secondary, but I remember how, maybe it's just this one data point biasing me, but I remember how that one game last year went, and as much as, you know, Albie wasn't super high on the secondary and didn't think that they did particularly well considering the opponent in week one, you know, seeing names like Rashad Williams, Reggie Pearson Jr., and Muddy Waters, all guys who were regular stars when healthy last year, all guys who did pretty well against U of H, it fills me with some concern, even if the U of H offense has mostly grown leaps and bounds since these teams met in early September of last year.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sam, my only other thought is just, I think the best thing for Houston is that I will not be there in Lubbock, because I've made that trip a number of times in recent years, and it never seems to go well. So I think that is the thing that fills me with the most confidence. You know, and this is, you know, a matchup that, you know, I feel like on paper I feel at least fair to decent about Houston's odds, but man, I just the way the last few games in Lubbock have gone, I believe that Houston's going to win one up there when I see it. And if we didn't say it in the preview last week, so I won't say it in this one, but you can probably guess how I feel about any margin of victory and what I would be happy with on Saturday for sure.
Would totally co-sign that one. And I think I'm usually the person who says, well, don't look at, oh, they lost the last three or four games. Look at this year's teams. Look at how they match up, blah, blah, blah. I'm kind of with you, man. I'll believe it when I see it. There have been at least a couple of the last several years of Texas Tech matchups that I've talked myself into. I thought, oh yeah, we match up pretty well. This should be a very close game. And to varying degrees, it's never been anything but Tech, at least since the just unforgettable 2009 Houston Cougar win, the drive that went 2 days, Case Keenum calling his own number to win the ball game. Just a great moment in Dustin and I's life. It really has not gone so hot since Case Keenum ran that ball in, Dustin. And I don't blame anyone who's kind of like, I'm not so sure. I believe what I see. I think the Cougars should at the very least match up well. I think if Tech wins this pretty comfortably, if UH looks like the second best team, I think you have the right to be a little bit disappointed, even if certainly a loss in Lubbock doesn't take away most of this team's goals. But I think I want to see a really competitive game. I think if it's the, you know, Cougars losing the last position kind of game, it's going to be a bit of a kick in the teeth, like any kind of late loss would be. But I would be pretty happy if this is a close game and the team acquits itself reasonably well, because I do think a good chunk of the schedule from here on out is going to be a good bit worse than Texas Tech. And there's a decent chance that Texas Tech's better than everyone we've seen AAC play this year. So, again, not the biggest shame, though, of course. Would love to break the streak and see the Cougars win one up in Lubbock.
All right. Well, I think that concludes our thoughts on the U of H Texas Tech game, but lots of other college football to talk about this coming week. No Thursday action this week, unfortunately, but we do have a fun one coming up on Friday as UCF hosts Louisville. You may remember that the Knights lost this one on the road last year in an absolutely bonkers ending that included Dylan Gabriel breaking his collarbone, ending his season and, by extension, his UCF career. But you know, I think a big chance for the Knights to get revenge in this one. You see the Cardinals lost 31-7 to Syracuse in week one. So if you're UCF, you're at home. If you're serious about being an AAC title contender this year, this is a game that I think they should definitely win, Sam.
A definite revenge game here, too, after that Louisville loss at Louisville by the Knights last year. And, yeah, I think this is prime. I feel like this one almost the same way I felt about Houston-Arizona without, I guess, the revenge game factor. But, yes, this one of these teams is a Power 5 team, but one of these teams is about to enter the, you know, the den of lions, and it's just not going to be very good for the visiting Louisville Cardinals. There was some brief preseason Malik Cunningham, the Louisville quarterback, for Heisman talk, but that's pretty much disappeared. The kind of thing disappears when you give up or score 7 points against the Syracuse Orange. And randomly, Louisville has a really good 2023 class, but their coach is just doing absolutely awful. So we'll be interested to see if that holds together. But yeah, pretty much your only good option for Friday is Louisville UCF. If you're just have been really missing college football, that Thursday night really got you jonesing. Boise State is playing New Mexico late night, but that one probably, even with a not up to vintage standards Boise State team, is probably going to be only competitive for about a quarter and a half.
Yeah, would definitely recommend after the UCF Louisville game, you just go ahead and go to sleep and get your
spend
rest.
Spend some time with your loved ones.
A more interesting Saturday of games. Saturday at 11 o'clock, the game that everybody is talking about, UTSA at Army. The Black Knights lost to Coastal in the season opener, but it was a competitive game on the road, and Coastal is a good team. I'd expect Army to be pretty good again this year, and this would be a good road game, a good road win if UTSA could get it. So apparently Alabama and UT Austin are also playing at the same time, but the main 11 o'clock game that everyone's going to be watching, definitely, UTSA up in New York to face Army.
I knew you were going UTSA Army or maybe Mizzou K-State, but I knew you were going UTSA Army there. I think I'm really interested from that one to see that UTSA defensive line that really gave the Cougars problems, at least for the first three quarters of the week one game in San Antonio. I'm curious what they do against that Knights flexible attack. It's obviously going to be a very different look than any they've seen, but I do believe they've played Army in the not too distant past. I want to say they played in the 2020 season, but I could be wrong about that. So probably a decent number of guys who have seen the flexman before, but also a unique, difficult offense to prepare for in 1 week, especially 1 week of what was kind of a gut punch loss to the Cougars in week one. If you want to have something in the small screen, yes, this might be where I would normally suggest Bam and a certain burnt orange school in Austin, but I would say probably if you want to have a game on the iPad or the laptop, Mizzou K-State will probably be at least reasonably entertaining, even if I cannot separate those two for the life of me.
All right, and then in the afternoon slot, overlapping with the U of H game, tragically overlapping with the U of H game, will be Iowa State at Iowa. Cruelty, as far as I am concerned, that the Cougs had to have a game going on at the same time as the Cy-Hawk Trophy game. The Hawkeyes, of course, you may remember, won their FCS opener by scoring 7 points on a field goal and two safeties. But Iowa State has plenty of questions of their own, replacing a lot of pieces from last year. I think last I saw, Iowa actually like a 4-point favorite in this one, despite their struggles, you know, putting any points on the board despite having not yet scored a touchdown on the season. So, yeah, I don't know. Just Iowa State has had some trouble with the Hawkeyes, even as they've had some good teams. And I don't know. This matchup has kind of historically been kind of a laughing stock, and it's the rivalry game between two bad teams, and it's kind of turned into more of an impressive matchup with a couple of as the programs I think have both strengthened in recent years. But yeah, I'm not sure after the season opener and knowing the pieces that Iowa State has to replace, this might be more of your classic ugly Iowa State football. And yeah, I don't know. I just have a bad feeling. Even after watching Iowa struggle like that, I just would do anything for an Iowa State 1-point victory on Saturday.
You mentioned at the beginning of this description of this game, tragic or tragedy. And buddy, if you want to see tragedy, just watch an Iowa Hawkeyes offensive possession. Woof. I mean, I know it's the team we just got done talking about having a field goal and two safeties in their week one game, but it's worth reiterating. They scored 7 points against an FCS team needing a field goal and two safeties to get to those 7 points. I don't know. It feels like, I've become kind of a secondary Iowa State, follower-ish just because of you as a friend. They've had like a good last several years. They're occasionally entertaining. I like the uniforms. They're very classic looking, but it feels like I've talked myself into a couple times that this being the year Iowa State's gonna win it, Iowa looked really terrible against insert name of week one opponent, and then it just ends up being like a 21-9 Iowa victory. And it's like that scene at the end of Burn Notice where J.K. Simmons' character asks the other guy, what did we learn about any of this? And just not a whole lot. And I never feel like I learn anything after watching this game. But boy, howdy, do I keep coming back to the trough to watch it every year. This one will probably be my second screener during the U of H game, even though there's a pretty entertaining Tennessee Pitt game in the same slot. If it gets bad enough, Dustin, as much as I want to see your family's clones do well, I might have to make the second screen an actual entertaining football game during that time slot.
I was going to say, I don't know if it's good or bad that the only games that are really going to be competing with my attention when U of H is playing is a couple of what might be kind of ugly football games, Iowa State, Iowa, and then Memphis Navy, I think, worth at least keeping an eyeball on. Maybe just, it might be too ugly to actually watch, but at least keeping an eyeball on the score. One of these teams is going to start the season 0-2, and I think whoever loses with one is probably going to be starting to have some conversations about how hot the seat under their coach is.
Nothing would be funnier to me than Navy scoring 7 points and losing to Delaware and then going out and beating Memphis this week. I don't think it'll happen, but it would make me laugh a good bit.
Yeah, and then at a weird 5 o'clock kickoff time, there's actually two games that I'm pretty interested in at the 5 o'clock kickoff time, which is not a usual Saturday kickoff time, but Old Dominion at East Carolina, obviously the Monarchs with a big win over Virginia Tech in the season opener, ECU coming just short, to coming a couple of kicks short of pulling off the upset against NC State. So probably a couple of pretty good teams here, maybe at the G5 level, and ECU, as you're trying to battle that heartbreak of that loss against NC State that you really had right there in your hands. Not an easy matchup against Old Dominion next week. And, I think a team that, as much as ECU's rightly excited about the team and rightly, has to be at least somewhat encouraged by staying really close to the top 15 NC State team. If you're not careful, you're going to suddenly look up and find yourself 0-2 this year.
Yeah, and I think I saw, at least when it opened, ECU was a pretty good-sized favorite over ODU. I don't think it was double digits, but I think it was at least high single digits, which somewhat surprised me. But, I know ECU was some bad luck away, quite honestly, maybe from winning that one against a top 25 NC State team. So I'm sure that plays a part. And yeah, I'm sure after playing NC State, even an Old Dominion team off of, a good win is still going to seem like a bit easier competition. But yeah, I mean, it's only two games, but if you're ECU and you're coming into the season with, I wouldn't say conference title expectations, but more expectations that the programs had since Ruffin McNeil was fired, I think it would be pretty disappointing to start this one 0-2 for the Pirates, and certainly possible. And the other game, the Kansas-West Virginia game, is interesting. I'm not saying I expect Kansas to win necessarily, but this was a pretty competitive game, I believe, in Lawrence last year. Kansas, you don't really know anything about what they did. They beat a bad FCS team by a lot of points, although, quite honestly, I guess when you're Kansas football, beating a bad FCS team by a lot of points has never always been a given in the last 11 years in that program, and they, you know, they looked pretty competitive at the end of last year. I mean, they beat a certain burnt orange school in Austin, a fact that Dustin and I take no small pleasure in. And West Virginia, we just got done talking about that hangover with ECU and having a real painful, tough loss to a rival. I mean, I don't know if there was a more painful, tough loss to a rival in week one than what happened in the backyard brawl up in Pitt.
Yeah, I was going to say, not only Kansas, you know, beating the burnt orange school in Austin last year, but then, you know, finishing their season with that win, then, you know, a 3-point loss to TCU, then just a 6-point loss at home against West Virginia to end the regular season. So I think within that, then the context of them, then, you know, having, you know, just trouncing their FCS team in their opener, you know, I think that gives you, you know, by Kansas standards, certainly that gives you some amount of optimism and, you know, real curious to see what that looks like in terms of, you know, on the field results on Saturday against West Virginia. But, you know, it should be fun if for no other reason than if Kansas, you know, makes this game real close or even finds a way to win this. You know, talk about some coaches on some hot seats. Neil Brown after losing the rivalry game and then, you know, on some, you know, fairly cowardly play calling. If you were to then turn around and lose to Kansas, I think 2 games into the season, his seat would be very, very hot.
I don't want to stereotype West Virginia fans, but if he punts on 4th-and-1 at midfield, some guy drunk on moonshine might run out of the stands after him. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but understandably a bit of angst in that fan base about how last week's game went.
At the very least, someone's going to light a couch on fire after the game or something. And really, oddly enough, 5 o'clock, the window more interesting to me than the 6:30 window, really the only game that I'm that interested in, Arizona State at Oklahoma State. Just kind of curious to see how this Cowboys team does after, you know, mentioned in their opener against Central Michigan, putting up, you know, kind of a bunch of points early, but then ending up giving up, you know, 40-some. So beating an Arizona State team coming off a win, coming off of a decent season, but with that Herm Edwards experiment and always seeming like it's shaky at best, very curious to see how this one plays out in Stillwater.
Yeah, you could look at Central Michigan and them scoring 44 points in week one as an aberration at this point, but I don't know if Arizona State, even in a win, scores a lot of points and, you know, racks up a lot of yards against you, I think that defense becomes even more of a concern and certainly not something that will quiet the Oklahoma State's fan base there.
Are there any other 6:30 games that I'm just missing, Sam, that are actually interesting? Because this is literally the only one that I have.
I think, do I have USC Stanford labeled correctly? I mean, I don't know if that's like an interesting game, but I don't know. You have Lincoln Riley and that, you know, very spready offense that they run against Stanford, who runs a bit of a more of a pro style, a bit more, what's the word, plotting, if you will. Definitely a style contrast, but I haven't even checked to see if they're in that time slot at all. It all kind of blends together. But that's the only, like, early evening-ish game. And, you know, I guess we'll go to Baylor-BYU here in a second. But other than Baylor-BYU, it's not really the strongest evening slate. I feel like this is a morning and early afternoon heavy week of games.
Yeah, I guess USC-Stanford, and that is a 6:30 kick. You are correct. And that's at least kind of somewhat interesting to see.
It's a contrast game.
Yeah, at least it's the first, like, actual team with a pulse for Lincoln Riley to play at USC. So I guess it's interesting from that perspective, if nothing else.
It's at Stanford, then, yeah, maybe. Upset, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, USC only an 8-point favorite from what I've seen, so it should be expected to be at least a somewhat close game. And then, yeah, a couple of really interesting night games. Baylor at BYU, you mentioned it, a couple of future Big 12 teams, future conference matchup here. You know, a BYU team playing at home, actually 3-point favorite even against a top 10 Baylor team. So two teams very, you know, coming off of good seasons, really high expectations. I know BYU looks like their top two receivers, I believe, are going to be out for this game, which I think could hurt them. So, you know, very intrigued to see how this one plays out and should be one of the, like I said, a fun future Big 12 matchup and kind of a good future indicator of the kind of tough matchups and exciting matchups we're going to see in our future conference.
And I'll be curious how the BYU defense does against the Baylor offense. If you want a tiny bit of background, Baylor's offensive coordinator, Jeff Grimes, was the offensive coordinator for several years at BYU, was actually the guy at the helm calling plays in 2020 when the Cougars faced off with BYU and Zach Wilson. They had a very fun, dynamic offense, but probably an offense that BYU's defense, even though I'm sure Grimes has changed, you know, some things about the scheme, has changed verbiage, certainly. You know, it's not something they'll probably be unfamiliar with. And yeah, I think there's a reason why the The Cougs with a U are 3-point favorites in this one. It'll be, yeah, I think certainly the evening matchup. I've seen a lot of the various Big 12 people we follow. I think rightfully, like, just losing their minds every time some national person's like, ooh, Bama and the school in Austin, that's the game of the week. And they're just like, there's an actual good game in the evening with a Big 12 team. But yeah, no, let's watch Bama slowly turn the Longhorns into a fine paste.
And yeah, definitely Baylor BYU, the pick of the litter for the night games, but a very strong second screen option kicking off at 9:30 is Oregon State at Fresno State. The Beavers, team seemingly heading in the right direction. Picked up a really dominant win over Boise State in the opener, really good win for them. And then Fresno State coming off of a really strong season, Jake Haner, really good returning quarterback there. I think they're one of the dark horse picks for potentially an NY6 bowl appearance this year, but would likely need to get a win over what looks like a surprise. Surprisingly, suddenly decent Oregon State team. So a game that feels like it could be really, really down to the wire. Could be a really, really fun finish. I get that vibe. Like I feel like Oregon State, Fresno State is going to do something crazy, go to multiple overtimes, or end on some crazy play or something. Just seems like it should be a really tight, competitive, hard fought matchup that lends itself to one of those crazy endings.
See, you made a great case for that game, but I would have had as actually my late night high entertainment value. Maybe neither of these teams is great, but you'll watch an entertaining football game. I would have actually picked Mississippi State at Arizona. Arizona just went into San Diego State's new stadium, beat the Aztecs pretty comfortably. They got a transfer actually from a fellow Pac-12 school, Jaden Deloria, from Wazoo. Looked really good in the opener. Gives Arizona a dynamic offensive threat for really probably the first time since like Khalil Tate's sophomore year in 2017, and Mississippi State's gonna obviously throw the ball around the yard with Mike Leach, so I think that game will be pointsy. I think if you're kind of trying to cling on to the college football day as it is, you could do a lot worse than Mississippi State and Arizona for a nightcap. I have no idea how these teams got paired up for non-conference scheduling. There was like a Cal Old Miss game a few years ago that felt kind of similar, but I'm glad they did. I think it's going to be a fun one for someone like me who's trying to cling to the last game on the evening schedule.
Yeah, I think that one, I've got score alerts turned on for that one as well. It's so rare and few and far between to see a Pac-12 team ever beat an SEC team that I just assume Mississippi State's going to win that one by 2 touchdowns or something. I'm not buying Arizona yet, although I was duly impressed by their win over San Diego State in the opener.
I thought San Diego State would beat them by 2 touchdowns, so, you never know. Fair. But, yeah, I agree with you. Probably a Bulldog win there.
All right, and then we did want to mention before we leave, as we're talking about college football at large, the playoff is going to expand. You may have heard about that. That is a news item that's come up since our last full episode, so we did want to at least give some thoughts on that. You've probably seen by now, but the format is that it's going to be a 12-team tournament with the top 4 teams receiving a first-round bye. 6 of the spots in the 12-team tournament, including the 4 first-round byes, will all go to conference champions, with the other 6 spots being given to at-large teams. And, the only negative I can even really think to say about this, I'll just go ahead and get out of the way, it's not the system. If I had been given carte blanche, to become all-powerful commissioner of college football, it's probably not what I would have picked. I would have picked just an 8-team tournament, 6 champs and 2 at-larges. But given that the Big Ten and the SEC were never, ever in a million years going to agree to that, I think in the, terms of things that could have realistically happened, I think this is about as good as it gets. It gets you, a guaranteed G5 team in the playoff every year. And even though that will never actually benefit Houston, because by the time this takes effect, Houston will obviously be in the Big 12, even as a quote-unquote Power 5 member at this point, we're still philosophically in favor of opening up the sport so that every team in the sport, has a chance to win the national championship and has a path to at least get to the playoff. And, Sam and I are not going to come here and tell you that some MAC team or Sun Belt team or whatever is going to win the playoff in any, realistic, near time frame. But, I think it is important to have the path open to everybody. No 16 seed is ever going to win the NCAA basketball tournament, but it's still important to have those games in there, and it's important to give everybody a path. And just excited to finally see that nod towards that, and actually having every team in the country have a realistic path towards a spot in the playoff.
And like anything in college football, I don't believe it's being done for pure reasons. I don't think that Greg Sankey and Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner and previously SEC commissioner, respectively, I don't think they're doing this because, oh, they're just, you know, their heart grew three sizes and they just really want to see, you know, a plucky group of five team have a path to the championship. I think all of the various people who are in what I think exists as leadership of college football realized how much money they were leaving on the table by only having a two semifinals and a final, and just realized, you know, hey, this isn't going to really change the, you know, parity of the sport. It isn't going to make Bama and Georgia, and to very slightly lesser extents Clemson and Ohio State, it's not going to make those programs any less, you know, of war machines. It's not going to make them any less potentially dominant. But also, it's not like in the men's basketball tournament we're saying, oh, well, Gonzaga's gotten a one seed all these years, you know, why bother, you know, being a team that makes as a 13 or 14 seed. No, I mean, it's like you said, it's about access. It's about having more college football with stakes. And I'm not going to certainly get into every, like, bad faith or just ill-conceived argument against this, because I would be here until the crack of dawn. But I find it very funny. Some guy, I think he's, like, one of the athletics, like, guys covering recruiting, is like, don't you see? This is going to mean we're going to have Ohio State and Alabama in the playoff every year. It's like, oh, no! What would I do about Alabama and Ohio State being in the playoff every year? It's only been every year since I was 20 years old, you know? Like, it's not going to make the top of the sport any less of the top of the sport, and I don't think anyone expects it to, but it's going to at least give us some more compelling games in late December and early January as the season winds down, and I don't think that could ever be a bad thing necessarily, even if the motives behind doing it are never going to be pure like anything in the sport.
Yeah, and I think it's going to make conference championship week exponentially more exciting at this point, you know, as opposed to, you know, seeing, you know, Alabama play Georgia or whatever, knowing both teams are going to the playoff after that regardless. All of a sudden, you know, you've got all these conference championship games that otherwise might not have been, you know, interesting, but you got teams playing for a spot in the playoff. You got teams playing for a first round bye in the playoff. Because like I said, you got four conference champions that are going to be, you know, getting first round bye. So literally none of the four teams getting the first round byes will be established until conference championship week. So I think that is going to lend itself to a ton of drama. And even, you know, as we've talked about expanding access to, you know, the G5 conferences, as Houston enters a Big 12 conference that, you know, I think the general thought that most people have about this conference, including you and I, Sam, is that it's going to be a bloodbath most years. It's going to be teams, you know, beating each other's brains in. And it's, you know, if you go, you know, if you lose only two conference games, that means you had a really, really incredible heck of a year in this what looks like a brutal Big 12 conference. So knowing that you've got the six conference champions that even in a year where, you know, if you can win a conference championship, even if that means going 9-3, that means that you have a chance to get in the playoff. I think if you can run the gauntlet in this Big 12, in this future Big 12, you know, that team is going to deserve to be in a 12-team playoff. And I think the six conference champions is going to kind of ensure that even the winner of maybe a very, you know, battle-tested and, you know, carrying a couple of scars Big 12 champion is going to get into the playoff every year. And you're going to see, likely, you know, as much as we like to talk crap about them, you know, if they can more or less stay together, you're going to see the Pac-12 champ get in. And it's, you know, conferences that, you know, even not only the G5 teams, you know, it's even Pac-12 teams have been having a hard time getting themselves in the playoff in recent years. And if you just look back, and if you just run the simulation backwards over the last 5 or 10 years, just the number of teams, including Houston, that all of a sudden you see those teams appearing in the playoff that otherwise have, you know, have never appeared in the playoff. I think that's awesome. That's just, it's so many more fan bases that are going to be involved. And even just as a casual fan, you know, of maybe, you know, none of the teams that make it in a given year, I just feel like I'm going to be so much more inclined to actually want to watch some of these matchups than when it's like, oh yeah, look, it's Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and, you know, fill in the blank fourth team for however many years in a row. Like I just can't be bothered to, even as a college football fan, just watch that same kind of thing over and over again. And this is just, it's going to necessarily inject some new blood into the process. And that can only make it more, I think, exciting for all college football fans.
No doubt.
All right. And I think that positive note is a good place to go ahead and end it. So we'll go ahead and do just that. It's nearly midnight here as I'm recording this in Houston. So I'm definitely ready to go ahead and end this episode. We'll go ahead and do that right there. But on the way out, definitely going to take some time, even at this late hour, to give out a big, huge Scott Holman podcast. Thank you to our Patreon supporters. Much appreciated. Very, very much. Sam and I, you know, putting in the work to do this podcast every week. It is very nice to see that tangible appreciation from those of you that are choosing to do that. So we thank you very much. If you do enjoy the podcast on a regular basis, you feel like you are getting at least a couple bucks a month worth of value out of it, we would love for you to go to shpodcast.com/support. You can find links to make a recurring monthly donation on Patreon, make a give us a one-time tip on PayPal, or buy some merchandise with our logo on it. And of course, you can also support us by going to homefieldapparel.com and using promo code Holman12, H-O-L-M-A-N-1-2 at checkout. We love hearing from you, the listener. You can email us, shpodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us, @shpodcast. Or if see us at a Cougar sporting event, you can give us a shout out and say hi, and we'd love that. And that's going to be it. So if you made it all the way to the end, you are an absolute rock star. And as always,
go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Vamos los Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
We ain't invited to the party. We had to kick the door in. No cap. 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 No